This is Kate Magruder with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. About 50 years ago, hundreds of mostly white, mostly college-educated, mostly privileged young men and women, often called hippies, streamed into the hills and valleys of this county in search of a place to forge a new kind of community. For the past many months, my colleagues at KZYX, Sarah Reith and Alice Wolfley, and I have been interviewing people to discover why they came, what they did when they got here, how it affected them, and how it might have changed this place we call home. The following is an excerpt from an interview I did with Ross Walker. He came here 46 years ago, became a forest restoration worker, a lawyer, city manager for the town of Willits, among many other things. Recently, the house he shared with his wife Charlotte was destroyed in the Redwood Valley fires. Here's Ross Walker talking about when he first came to this area.
Well, I came to live in Mendocino County in 1974. I probably visited the first time, maybe 1972, somewhere in that range. Where I was visiting was a particular destination. It wasn't just Mendocino County. I was coming to, as we referred to it in Laguna Beach, where I was living at that time, the land. Yeah, that was Greenfield Ranch, west of Ukiah. Place that turned me on in so many ways when I came to visit and drew me out of urban life and kind of a mixed up life in a way at that point in time for me, breaking up of a relationship and also kind of a lack of direction in my graduate studies, not really knowing what I wanted to do, and coming up and visiting my friends, Bob Currier, Kate Babcock at that time, and just seeing what was going on in the hills of Mendocino County somehow felt like this is where I wanted to be. That's what motivated me. When I came to Greenfield Ranch in the early 70s, what I saw was an open, beautiful area of land, but what I also saw were young people my age from various backgrounds who were just taking a different course than what I had been doing. So it wasn't just the place, it was the people. It was the community, it was building houses from scratch, building gardens from scratch, getting together with people and hanging out and playing music and doing it all in what were challenging but really fun circumstances. And the challenge was, hey, we didn't have electricity, we had bad roads, we were a ways out of town, but we just felt this huge inspiration to and really this gift, like, wow, we get to do this. Let's take complete advantage of what's going on. So I just saw an opening, I think, is really what I saw for myself. It seemed like, okay, Southern California, Laguna Beach, that wasn't a terrible place to live. I was near the ocean. I played frisbee a lot. It wasn't like it was a bad environment, but this place here just seemed, well, you've got paradise on your coming to paradise. It seemed like in its own way that. The reception in the community for the people that came in the early 70s then was mixed. Ukiah, pretty traditional town, and the interface that we had with the community, because we were doing things like buying fencing and taking care of animals, frequently brought us into contact with the farm supply store and a number of places around the stockyard that used to be down on the south end, where you met folks that were a little bit different background than what I had come out of in Laguna Beach, that's for sure, going to a liberal university. So I can remember going into the auction yard there on the south end of town where you could get manure, and which is what we were looking for. And I was there with a guy named Tom Forrest, and both of us pretty long hair, pretty different looking. And the guys in there just simply refusing to let us have it. And I was kind of argumentative, but Tom was just going, come on, we got to get out of here. We're not getting this. So I remember that interaction, and I can remember some other interactions like it. But I also remember the standout people in this community The two really for me were a guy named Baldy from Ridgewood Ranch, and the other one is, well, it's two, Georgianella Butler in their place with the Cherry Ranch, who just taught me incredible life lessons of openness. And they came out of the same traditional background, agricultural oriented people on the land. You know, their friends were the mechanics and the lots of other folks from the same area. And yet they just opened their lives and their hearts and their pieces of land to this new generation of folks that came up. And so it was a real turn on, a welcoming. When I came to Mendocino County, I don't know if I had a clue, really, how I was going to make a living, particularly. I knew I had to have some income. But as I look back on it right now, I'm not sure exactly what I had in mind as far as making money, because it didn't really seem that important. Changed, of course, over time. But at the time, I don't think idealism is too strong a word. That was what was going on, not just in my life, but in lots of people's lives. It's like, hey, there's something more here than... In fact, in a certain way, it was a rejection, what I'd come out of. It's not like I had a bad life growing up or anything like that, but for whatever reasons, part of a movement of people that saw the Vietnam War as sickening, and so we had a great disgruntlement with what was going on governmentally. More and more, I saw the smog of Southern California just being, and the traffic, and a lot of things just seemed like... It seemed like the world was falling apart, and it is. It's not like that's changed. What the advantage of these many years now is teaching me, anyway, is it's not like we were wrong. We may just have had the pace of things a little off. But the thing that we got, that things are going in a bad direction and let's look for something else, seemed way, way, way more important than what I'd gotten into graduate school for. So I just kind of fell into being the caretaker of Parcel 13 in the fall of 1974. And in the course of being on Greenfield Ranch, I met a woman, Marguerite, at that time, Mira, somewhat later. And we struck up a relationship, and I'd basically moved in over at Marguerite's place with her and her two kids. And I began earning money as a tree planter. So I started working on a tree planting crew for Masonite Corporation, back when Masonite ran its own tree planting crews. And that was in the winter of 74, 75. What was going on with food was a big part of why we were on the land. I think it's about some of the dumb things we did. I remember before we ever came up, Ed and Rocky and I, and I don't remember who else, came up one winter with a bunch of fencing, stayed at the ranch house where Dennis and Kathy were down there. We trucked it on up the hill. Carried. You know, we carried the, you know, fence posts and fencing and on up, got it all up there. You know, the whole project being to build a fence so we could plant fruit trees, because that was the whole point of, you know, being on the land. You got to have fruit trees. We put 2x4s, just raw fir wood, into the ground and hung fencing around it. And it couldn't have been more than a year before the thing completely fell down or were knocked over by the herd of wild goats that were up there. We knew nothing about what we were doing, but we were determined that we were going to get fruit trees into the ground, because that was, you know, like the most important thing to do. I haven't been a great gardener in my life, but anything I learned about it started really on Greenfield. Got turned on to a lot of stuff related to growing food, being there. There was a big project, boy, I can't even remember the year, but it would have been 76 or 77, to take down these greenhouses in Redwood City. And a whole bunch of us from Greenfield Ranch descended on this parcel of land that dispensing with their greenhouses and outbuildings. And I saw this one shed building that I thought, it's all kind of there. If we could just move it up to the ranch, it would work. So a bunch of guys, mainly John Hensley and at that time, Rocky Gulledge, was his name he was going by, Chris later, helped me saw this thing down in pieces and load it on a flatbed truck and carry it up to Greenfield Ranch and build a platform foundation for it and lean the wall pieces up together and link them together and then build a roof over the top, largely with completely recycled materials. And that was where we moved in our wood cook stove and our kerosene lamps, and in 1977, and that's right where my son Orion was born. As we got ready for him, you know, we were building the kitchen house and getting the dome spiffed up a bit, and had Mira had Orion right on the floor of the dome in November of 1977, and we were ready for him with a little house in that first year. What do I remember about the birth of my son on Greenfield Ranch is being pretty stressed out as it got towards the time of the birth, because the birth was in November. Orion was born November the 10th. And back in those days, there wasn't a lot of gravel on the Greenfield roads. And the midwife, Lynn Meadows, lived way across the other side of the ranch. So, you know, what if the roads are out that night? What if it's bad driving? You know, that was one of my main concerns. So I bought myself a big old International Harvester four-wheel drive vehicle, thinking if we have to really get somewhere that night, we got to have a way to do it. So I really remember the preparation of being ready with the idea of how do we get the midwife here under difficult circumstances, and how do we get Mira out if we had any kind of problem. So the night my son Orion was born, Mira went into labor sometime in the middle of the night, and I do not recall when. But the plan was I was going to drive over to the other side of the ranch and get Lynn and bring her back. Lynn, the midwife. I came out of our dome, and for whatever reason, I don't recall why, our neighbor, David Patton, was either going out or coming in. Probably coming in. It was probably 1 a.m. or something like that. And I grabbed him and said, David, would you drive over and get Lynn so that I can stay here with Mira? And he said, fine. So I went back and hung out with Marguerite, Mira. David rode across the ranch, got Lynn, brought her back. She came in, immediately gave me my marching orders of get these instruments boiling on that top of that stove. And the rest was just a matter of come over here and catch this kid. Mira did the rest, of course, and Lynn. I do remember, I think it was the same night, as it was over and Mira got up and we went outside our doors and looked up into the sky, and the constellation of Orion was up there in the stars, and we said, Orion, that's who he'll be, Orion. So he was. There are so many occasions on the ranch that stand out to me. In the early years, it was a party a lot of times, you know, impromptu, but there was a drawing together on certain occasions. Halloween was one, New Year's, but particularly solstice, the summer solstice party was a regular event every year. And if I cast my mind across it, there are just a number of things that would be standouts. But I'll say one was standing in the parking lot of the Greenfield Ranch House when the Flying Karamazov brothers had been invited to that party, and they showed up, guys that afterwards became stars in the entertainment circuit, Las Vegas and whatnot. But back in those days, they were kind of folks like us, hanging out and doing stuff and taking their act around here and there. But there they were at the Greenfield Ranch House on solstice, who knows exactly what year. There we are, we're out in the parking lot with a whole big circle of people circled around these guys, three of them, who were pretty long distances, I would estimate at least 30 feet, juggling various objects, going around in a three-way thing, and everybody's just cheering them on, and somebody in the crowd yelled, take it off! And these guys, hardly without a beat, while they juggled these clubs and things that were going on, and the clubs were flying, and they were pulling off various parts of their clothing, their shoes, and then their shirts as they went, until we had three nude guys juggling stuff, and the crowd went wild. Of course, they took it off. Cool.
Now we'll hear from someone who was living in a teepee on her parents' property in Illinois when she got the call in 1972. 5 years later, she co-founded the Ukiah Players Theater. You might recognize this voice.
Kate Babcock Magruder. I got a call from our friends in Laguna Beach, California. I was in Illinois with my partner, Bob, whom I'd met at college. And they had heard of this piece of property outside someplace called Ukiah, California. And it was a ranch called Greenfield Ranch, and it was being subdivided. Our friends from Laguna had already gone up to visit Greenfield Ranch and said it was beautiful. And did we want to come back and buy a piece of property with them there? And I remember that moment, kind of, it's like in the continental divide of my life, whether I would go east to Maine or back to Northern California, where I'd never visited. But it wasn't really a tough decision. So we said sure, and we sent our hard-earned little money, because it was not very expensive at the time to buy land. We sent it back, and we were all of a sudden part owners of Parcel 13 on Greenfield Ranch. We saw Greenfield Ranch for the first time on Christmas Day, 1972, and then we moved with that same teepee to Greenfield on Easter, 1973. When you bought in, you had in common then 200 acres of Greenfield, which included the original ranch house. So there had to be general meetings every month to make the decisions and to decide, whether the roads were getting fixed and what culverts needed to be put in and any of the myriad decisions that had to be made when all of a sudden you were living cooperatively with a group of people you never met. I have a copy of a letter that I wrote home to my parents after the first general meeting that I went to in April of 1973. It's a long, long letter on legal paper, and I was just horrified by the general meeting because all the decisions had to be made by consensus, and you had to just hammer it out, and it was exhausting. And I didn't have the makeup for it. I didn't have the mettle. And I remember in the letter that I wrote home to my parents that it was worse than student council. One of the bylaws was no hunting, no dogs and no hunting. And I had been a vegetarian already for a few years, and that seemed proper and understandable to me that there wouldn't be any hunting. So in one of those first meetings, there was a family who'd moved to the ranch. None of us had many resources, and it was difficult to have enough food and to have enough, supplies that you needed, and they were finding it difficult. And Troll, who was a hunter, felt like it was going to be important for him to try to get some meat for his family. I remember in his phrase, he wanted to take a deer. He stood up at the meeting and he said, "I'm going to have to take a deer." And the alarm and the horror that rippled through the meeting, it was like, that's not part of the agreement, that we can't do that. That's against the bylaws. That's against the rules. And it was a long, bitter conversation that unfolded. And I don't know that it was ever resolved. Probably Troll did take a deer. I mean, how are we going to know? Everybody was living fairly far apart from each other. This is a 5,400 acre ranch. So I hope he did take a deer in retrospect, because as it turned out, of course, the deer population burgeoned when there was no hunting. And that was not a happy, circumstance either. People had gardens and deer needed to eat too. And so people's gardens, were often ravaged by deer. I remember Bob and I went to see Pete Passoff. He was farm advisor after we moved here, to say, what can we grow? This is where we're living, up on Greenfield Ranch, right next to the Singley Ranch. And, what can we grow? And Pete Passoff looked at us with kind of fatigue. And I think he'd already talked to many people like us who'd been coming into the county with the same kind of starry-eyed optimism. And he said, "Well, you can't grow very much up there, but you can paint pictures. Can you paint pretty pictures?" And so we kind of skulked away from Pete Passoff and made our garden. And we lived in the teepee for that summer of 73. And we found out, like many people had discovered, that there were old primo redwood, like old growth redwood chicken houses in Petaluma that had been built during the chicken heyday in Petaluma when it was the egg basket of the world, and they weren't being used anymore. And we found a Japanese woman who allowed us to take apart one of her old redwood chicken houses, and we did that over the course of a couple months, I guess, and hauled up in our 1953 Chevy truck. We hauled up back up to Greenfield Ranch all the tongue and groove redwood boards, and we stacked them. And, you know, for a couple of months there, as we approached the fall, the rainy season, my big job was to have a bristle brush, a heavy duty bristle brush, and I would like scrape the old chicken off the wood while Bob would read this book called, oh darn it, I can't think of it. It's a wonderful book about building your homemade house that was very simple. And it was just a rectangular one-room house with a slant roof facing south. It was very cozy, and we found a little wood cook stove, and we had our sink. We hauled water for the first year, at least. We hauled in 5-gallon drums from town. We hauled water, or sometimes we probably would filch it from the ranch house, as many people were. We built our house then in the fall. We had the roof on. It was tight. By the time the rains came in November, it rained every day straight for 36 days that fall. And our friends from Laguna Beach came up to live with us in the one room. It was very cozy. And we were all stuck in this little room during the rains, and it just poured, and you couldn't drive anywhere because the roads were bad anyway, and they quickly turned to impassable red mud. And we read out loud to each other, and I remember that first fall, we read out loud Inside the Third Reich. That was one of our favorites. And Breakfast of Champions by Kurt Vonnegut. One of my kind of my favorite memories of Greenfield is there was going to be a big Halloween party at the ranch house, and someone had brought me some peyote buttons from somewhere and given them to me, and I decided that for the week before Halloween, I would steep those buttons in water. I'd make a peyote tea on the wood stove in the cabin for a week, just kind of quietly let them steep, and I fasted that whole time. And while I fasted, I made a costume for the Halloween party. My sister had sent me this old velvet, little velvet vest with like velvet leaves and dark ruby colors. And it had little old ancient lace on it. And I made a little tiny little skirt. And I had little teeny tiny little tights, some kind of tights. And I attached to the skirt with embroidery thread, I wove bay leaves and madrone berries and hung them from the skirt. And I had a little hat with a feather in it, and I decided I was a bird in a tree. And when it was getting time to walk down to the ranch house, I drank the tea, and I began to feel electric. And my friend Ross Walker, who had lived in Laguna Beach with us and had actually gone to UC Irvine with Bob and myself earlier, he had come and joined us and lived at the ranch, and he was living in a little cabin just above our house, and he came down to meet me at our cabin, and we were going to walk down together, and there was a full moon, and he had a guitar, and he came and he was playing his guitar under the full moon on the ridge waiting for me to come outside to join him to walk down. And I walked out as my little bird in a tree, and the bay laurel trees and the oak trees all around me just kind of like leapt to attention, or that's how it felt to me, and spoke to me and said, "What do you think you're doing? You have just called to you all of this elemental power. You know, you are now, you are of us, you are made out of us, and you had better be responsible for what you're doing and what you're calling into being, into existence. And, you know, you're welcome. We welcome you, but just stay awake, pay attention, and realize what realm you've stepped into." It was the most amazing feeling, and we what do deer do? We weren't exactly leaping, but we were certainly cantering downhill all the way to the ranch house. And we had a great night at the ranch house with a group of people singing and telling stories. And then at about midnight, it was time to go home. And I remember feeling again, still like a little deer or a gazelle. And I kind of leapt up, kind of straight up this hill several miles, leapt back up to the cabin and went to sleep happily and woke up in the morning with not a shred of hangover or feeling of grogginess from my peyote tea and my whole experience. But it was the loveliest psychedelic experience I've ever had. And this has continued for me, this sense of imaginative space and this message came to me later that there, anything I want, literally this message came to me out of a voice from the sky came and said to me, whatever you want to create here, you can create. It's up to you. It's, you know, your imagination is is the limit. And it's because, and this was the second part of the message, it's because of the people who are here. So that there are enough other people here who have the same kinds of ideas and dreams and vision that you have, that if you want to make something, you will be able to do that, which was just what I didn't feel in Woodstock, Illinois, which is a lovely little town. Fabulous little town with a 19th century opera house on the square, and that's where I got to play as a little girl and kind of cut my teeth in theater. But whenever I would go back to Woodstock and stay there for any amount of time, I always had the sense that the ceiling was really low and I had to kind of duck because people weren't able to see very far. There was only so far that they would allow themselves to imagine what could be, which was, just the opposite here. It was this sense of anything is possible. And, it's not just because of the, we're on the edge of the country, but because of the people who are also here. And not only the people who came, but the people who are already here. There was a tension between the community that was already here and those of us who kind of poured in. But as I've spent more time in Ukiah and got to know more people here, the great generosity of spirit of the people who are here who wanted to help, once I started doing theater, people who wanted to help and be involved and support us and donate and just really appreciated the fact that there was new energy and new ideas. This experiment, this thing that continues to happen here in Mendocino County, the creativity of this county and the resilience of this county and the activism of this county, that couldn't have happened without the agreement and the relationship with the people who are already here and what they already knew and what they'd already gone through. And when I was in college in the theater department at Irvine, it was a really good professional theater department, and everybody there knew, that he or she was headed for L.A. or New York and that's what they were going to do. And nobody was suggesting that, that anything else was valid. So when I came to Greenfield, I thought, well, I'm never going to do theater again. That's not going to be part of my life. And so then kind of tumble into it as deeply and totally as I did was not an expectation that I had. And I've been able, being here, interestingly enough, I've been able to do anything that I've wanted to do. I've been able to play any part I wanted to play. That's what you get to do when you're in a little community. And I've been able to literally help people tell their stories. And it's been as satisfying a kind of a life and work that I could have ever imagined. I've been so fortunate. And it's interesting listening to these other stories that I've had as I've been interviewing other people. That's a refrain that I continue to hear. I'll be interested to see if other people have had that sense that of all places, this place has been that kind of a match to your one's inner self, to who you were to become.
This is Sarah Reith with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. We just heard from Ross Walker and Kate Magruder, who came to Greenfield Ranch in the early 1970s. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, and Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.